This is Lake Effect from 89.7 WUWM, Milwaukee's NPR. Thanks so much for tuning in. I'm Bonnie North. Engineering touches everything. From our cars to our smartphones to putting humans in space, engineers make it happen. But sometimes it seems that products or designs aren't completely thought through before they come to the market. Our first guest, Dr. Christina Rapella, wants to ensure the current and next generations of engineers are thinking about innovative and inclusive ways to solve our problems. Dr. Rapella, who goes by Chris, is a biomedical engineer, and she's also the dean of the Opus College of Engineering at Marquette University. She joins me in the studio now. Thanks so much for being here today.
Thank you, Bonnie. Thank you for having me here.
I was so fascinated by your bio that came across my desk in a press release for something else that you were doing that I thought, I want to talk to this woman.
Well, thank you.
And I want to talk to you because innovation is a word that gets bandied about a lot. Mm-hmm. We hear it all the time. Everything has to be innovative. Business needs to be innovative. Our own industry here, radio and media, need to be innovative. For you, as someone who sort of specializes in that, what does innovation mean to you? How do you define it for your students at Marquette?
Thank you. It's a great question, and you're right. It's a word that's thrown around a lot, and there are many different people who have written books on it and have their own definition. But for me, I see it in the broadest terms of innovation is about seeing things differently. It is about connecting what we often think of as disconnected or unconnected and doing it in a way that creates value, right? So you're thinking of things differently, applying things differently, bringing things together that you hadn't seen as being connected before, and doing it in such a way that it really creates value for an organization, for people, for the world.
And it doesn't have to be monetary value. It can be all kinds of different values.
Absolutely not. We talk about not just financial value, but their, you know, societal values, values to the way people live their life, really just making the world a better place. And there are many ways of doing that.
And so when you talk to your students about this, what are some of the ways that you encourage thinking differently? How do you get them to piece those things together?
Well, I think there are multiple ways of doing that. One is go hang out with people who are different from yourself, different in their discipline, their major, their ethnicity, their nationality, where they hang out. You know, you might hang out in coffee shops. Other people are out, you know, hiking, biking, whatever. Go hang out with people who are different from yourself. Talk to them, learn their stories, learn about their history, where they come from. Try different activities. Do things you hadn't done before. Go out and try something you didn't do before, whether it's a sport, whether it's, you know, a particular hobby, or maybe it's go visit a place that you haven't been to before. Really kind of putting yourself out of your comfort zone. I think that's often the problem is we tend to get settled in things that we're comfortable with. And really,
that we know.
That's right. Yeah. Innovation really happens when you go out of that comfort zone and try new things that you hadn't thought about and are encouraged to do that, that you all of a sudden see things differently and you see that people have all kinds of different lenses on the world.
Engineering is one of those disciplines that needs to have that because you pull in so many different threads. There's so much that engineers have their hands on in the world. And I was just thinking about, there was a Guardian article about a month or so ago talking about how the world has been engineered for men. And I literally mean it in an engineering way, like chairs and table heights and, you know, protective vests.
Airbags.
Airbags. All these things. Cars, you know, that it's not, you know, for shorter women in particular, it's very unsafe, the position you have to be in. And so are those kinds of things what you're working on at Marquette, trying to get people to think about not just solving the problem of like we need airbags to work, right, but we need them to work for an entire range of population?
Absolutely. I mean, I don't think you can think of any one thing that engineering doesn't touch, whether it's our roadways, it's our cell phones, it is the way we design a syringe and a needle used in medical environments, surgical techniques, cars, airplanes. We touch everything, right, as engineers. But for too long, we often designed it exactly maybe for a male, right? You know, even when the National Institutes of Health used to do a lot of research, it was based on the male and maybe even the white male kind of thing. And so we know much better that that doesn't work well. That's why airbags were, you know, there's injuries to children and women because of that. And so what we're doing now is trying to help our students think there's a much bigger world out there, and you need to design around all these different types of people and cultures and that kind of thing. For example, we have a student organization that's involved in Engineers Without Borders, right? And so they're going to countries in Latin America and helping to develop water systems or adding electricity to villages. And it's not okay to just take our technologies in the U.S. and take it to those places. It doesn't often work that way. You need to go and experience life and those cultures and find out what those people want in terms of what they consider good for their own societies and their own cultures, and then help to engineer within that context. And so we giving our students those kinds of experiences, having our, let's say, biomedical engineers go out into a medical clinic and watch how a patient experiences their healthcare, watch nurses and physical therapists and doctors actually work, as opposed to you sitting in your cubicle, never walking those floors and thinking you're designing some great technology for them that oftentimes sits on a shelf because you didn't take the time to look at the customer.
The idea was great, but the actual execution didn't work.
Right, and I learned that when I was in college. I did a couple summer internships with Marquette Electronics, which was Mike Cudahy's company. And one of the most valuable things I learned from that was you better know your customer and just walk the floors and observe what's going on, because you can engineer a really great patient monitor that the brains are real sophisticated and smart, and yet you will find out that no one touches it. And, you know, there were all these buttons on the monitor, and the only button that a nurse ever touched was alarms on, alarms off. And most of the time it was off and not even doing what it was supposed to do because it wasn't designed in a way that was friendly to the user, friendly to the customer.
It's almost like engineers also need a degree in anthropology and and social sciences, because mm-hmm. you need to understand human behavior so thoroughly in order to create products that work.
You're right. And that's why at Marquette we have this thing called the core curriculum and why the humanities are so important. It is important to understand that your technology is not used in isolation, right? That all these other human factors, cultural factors, economic factors all impact your work and whether or not your invention, your technology is ever going to be used, whether it's going to be successful. And so that is why we have this core curriculum and the humanities, to inform our students to be critically thinking in this greater world of not just technology, but all the other things that influence your work as an engineer. And so we're very passionate about that. It's also important we want our students to go out and be leaders. You know, the Jesuits are, everybody's a leader. So we want them to be leaders in their fields, in their communities, in their schools, whatever it might be. And so you need to have that really rich, well-rounded education in order to think critically in a very complex world.
You are a woman heading an engineering school, and that is rare. Mm-hmm. And so just having you in that position should be shifting some thinking, even if it's not conscious thinking, I would hope.
Yes, I think it does. I'm very big on culture and how important that is to an organization. And, you know, this idea that culture eats strategy for lunch, and that we can have all kinds of great ideas as a college, whether it's education, our research, the way we serve the world. But if we don't have a good culture within our college and the way that we look at people and respect people, respect their differences, respect the gifts they bring to our community, we aren't going to get very far. And so in my first, you know, 3-4 years as a dean, I've worked a lot on thinking about our culture within engineering and how we behave as a team, how we behave as a college, how we interface with the world, and how we're preparing our graduates for that world. And I hope it's made a difference, I think, in terms of appreciating diverse perspectives. How do we have adult difficult conversations? How do we appreciate each other's gifts? How do we celebrate our successes and really make people feel like every person in the college, our students, our staff, our faculty, every single person is a leader in our college. They all are expected to be leaders, and they're also expected to be contributing to that mission.
I assume you're also trying to recruit people into the school who don't fit the stereotyped idea of who an engineer is.
Yeah, and those stereotypes are real, and they're often deserved because, as I say, for decades we had people who fit those stereotypes just kept recruiting and employing people just like themselves because that was very comfortable. But we need to get out of that, and that's men and women alike. It's not just women, but there are men who see those stereotypes and are put off by it as well, and it's a shame because If we're going to be truly innovative, we need to represent people from all walks of life. If we're going to serve the world, we need to look more like the world we serve, right? And so we need to do a better job of bringing down those stereotypes and welcoming different types of people. So, for example, we're doing a lot to bring in first-generation students, often from lower economic backgrounds, and so that requires scholarship funds. And so we're working really hard to raise scholarship to allow these students the opportunity of an education that will give them the kind of future that they dream of. So we're working hard on that. We work on STEM outreach activities. So some of our student organizations, as well as our faculty, are getting out into middle schools and high schools, particularly in the urban environments here, and giving some of those students exposure to what are the STEM fields, what is an engineering career like, how important might my work be to making the world better and my own community better. So we do that. And then we have programs like our ELEAD program. I truly believe if you want more women and underrepresented groups in engineering, they want to see the opportunity for leadership, that maybe they're not just going to sit in a cubicle the rest of their life and punch out something on a computer, but they're going to lead people, work with people, be able to take organizations to a different place. And so we created ELEAD, which stands for Engineers in the Lead, and it's a 3-year undergraduate curriculum for engineering students to help them develop their leadership acumen and think about how they are going to be leaders someday in organizations, not right away. And they learn that leadership is not about a title in any way, but how do I do better leading people through change and working with teams of people?
I was going to say, I would imagine the STEM, you mentioned going into middle schools, and the idea, there's been a lot of emphasis on STEM education starting in grade school and going through high school. Are you seeing the students that you are recruiting from some of the underserved populations? Are people well prepared, or do they need remedial work in STEM fields?
We often see both. Absolutely, we're seeing students, some of these underrepresented students from here in the urban environment who are very well prepared. They're getting what they need out of the schools. The schools have made a real commitment to developing particularly their math and science skills and their interest, but also their ability to write and read. I mean, that's all important, very important to it as well. And they are doing it. Other students haven't had that opportunity. Maybe because of their local schools or neighborhoods, they aren't given that opportunity. And so they often do need some sort of remedial to kind of bring them up to speed where they can be. Sometimes that is served well by some of our trade and tech schools in the area that can bring them up to speed for where we need them to be. We offer some, you know, remediation type courses, and some of the courses we have, we don't often have enough of that, and that's something we think about. So we find it is effective to work with the teachers in these high schools and middle schools to help them do a better job of preparing these students and maybe help assist them with what they're doing in their classrooms and their laboratories to appreciate just where the students need to be in order to be successful when they get to a college environment.
And then, of course, become successful engineers once they graduate.
Right. Yeah. And I also want to comment that it's been great that there's, in the last decade or so, there's been more of an emphasis on teaching STEM, getting students excited about STEM in their middle school and high school years, and it's good. And oftentimes, you know, part of the problem is just not having teachers who, I mean, if you haven't practiced as an engineer, it's hard to talk about excitedly if you've never done it, right? But yet there are teachers who are trying to do that through programs like Project Lead the Way and some of those sorts of things, which is great. And I'm glad there's so much more. And the word engineering is much more commonplace in schools, K-12 schools, and amongst teachers and stuff. But sometimes I worry that we maybe swing too far. So if schools only specialize in STEM and only want to be STEM academies, don't give up on the other parts of education. I'm a big advocate for music and art and what that brings to an engineering student as well, because that's really important to creativity. Again, having different lenses on problems, to be creative, to be innovative. And sometimes I'm worried we're losing that, and I'm a big proponent of be well-rounded as long as you can. Don't shut doors too early. And if you look at a lot of our engineering students, they're in the choirs, they're in the bands, they're in this, you know, they're in the orchestras. They do different types of art, and they, you know, they have all these other things, and they do dance. And so I would not want to see sort of the fine arts eliminated because we want to put so much emphasis on just STEM.
Right. They're interdisciplinary.
Yes.
And they really have to be.
Yes.
I mean, the true sense of a liberal arts education included math and science mm-hmm. and art and literature. It was that well-rounded idea.
Absolutely.
Yeah. You're also a researcher yourself. Do you get any time to do the kind of stuff that you love to do in the lab for yourself?
Yeah, that's a great question. Not as much since I stepped into the dean's role. It's much harder because of all the other demands on the job. I used to do a lot of work in more general terms of what we call signal processing, where you're taking measures of things going on in the body. Whether, for me, it started with signals that are generated by the heart electrical signals and how we use that to diagnose if the heart is functioning properly or not. And when it's not, how do we use our technologies like pacemakers and defibrillators to make change? And then I moved into brain imaging research, where we were looking at particularly what we call functional magnetic resonance brain imaging, where we can actually look at brain function while people are performing tasks, map that to certain areas of the brain and be able to use that, let's say, for pre-surgical planning or to look at recovery after stroke and those sorts of things. So a lot of fun, and it really was sort of the early days of artificial intelligence, where you're developing medical devices to automatically detect and diagnose things going on in the body. So very, very fun. I did it for a long time. Since I've been dean, it's been harder to do that. I don't have as much time as I'd like to have for graduate students who are a big part of helping in the lab and helping research. But I stay in touch in a different way now. My job now is to really know the research of all the faculty in the college. And so I spent a lot of time learning about what's going on in their laboratories and what kind of research they're doing and how do I help them secure funding for that. And whether it's from donors, government agencies, foundations, I have to be able to talk intelligently about their research so that I can tell other people about the good work as we look for resources, funds, new faculty, graduate students. So I see my role is to really support the research of others. And that keeps me intellectually engaged in many, many ways, having to know now about research across environmental engineering, civil engineering, mechanical engineering, biomedical, electrical. And the beauty of that is I also get to see the interdisciplinary nature of that. And also what are some, and that helps me to be innovative, because it's like, hey, did you know this person environmental is working on something that you're interested in mechanical, and you could bring those fields together. So I feel like the greatest joy in my job has always been, how do I bring people from different disciplines and fields together to work together in a team to do something new? And I get to do a lot more of that as a dean now, and also find the resources to support those kind of multidisciplinary efforts.
And then you get to also champion people that are doing fabulous work.
Right. And I love doing that, right?
Yeah,
that's so exciting. We have some great young faculty and new faculty, and seeing some of the things that they're doing and the impact they're having on the world is just really a joy to be able to support them.
Dr. Christina Rapella is the Opus Dean of the Opus College of Engineering, and she's a professor of biomedical engineering as well at Marquette University. You can find out more about her and about the school from a link at wuwm.com.